So we now move to Psalm 11. Need I say it? In the Hebrew count numbering, it'll be Psalm 10 if you find it in the responsorial psalm in your missal, for the reasons I've given you. Faced with evil, the psalmist refuses to flee. He asserts his faith in God, who is just, and he's certain that those who live a good life will experience God's presence and vindication. They will, as he puts it, behold God's face, meaning God will be visibly present, acting to save. And the psalm begins, verse 1, "In Yahweh I take refuge. How can you say to me, flee like a bird to the mountains?" Flee away, when he's got his deep longings in him that are much deeper than this. He's not going to run away from this dreadful situation to the mountains as though his physical life was all he cared about. He's got deep spiritual aspirations that he wants to stay near the temple and all that. So, how can you say to me, flee like a bird from the mountains? For look, he says, the irreligious, the same word used in Psalm 1, those who ignore God or have no sense of the sacred, they are bracing their bow, fitting their arrow to the string, to shoot from the shadows at the upright of heart. Verse 3, when foundations are destroyed, what can the just do? It's a really good question. I feel like praying that. I don't want to, anyhow, we've all got different political persuasions, but as I see it, the country has gone downhill for the last 6-10 years, dreadfully, morally. Economics has become far too thing, untruth, preemptive strikes, which is really dreadful after all the hundreds of years that we've worked out relationships, ignoring the United Nations, and it goes on and on and on and on. And I see this shocking deterioration of the, and then public stuff all sold off to the private enterprises, and things that my grandfather and father, working in the unions, took years to build up rights of the ordinary person. Now it's, you've got to stand up as one person against a whole corporate institution and negotiate a wage or something. God, it's just impossible. So, like, in other words, the mighty are becoming mightier, the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. Power is in the hands of the few, and I could go on and on and on, and would sound like a Labour Party political thing. But I don't mean it to be pro-Labour, I just mean it to be against what we've got. So, when the foundations, or what about the church, any institution, things, I know when I was teaching in a school, you can build a school spirit up over years and years and years, but it can go very quickly, can't it? Or the spirit of a choir, or a parish. It's a very delicate and beautiful thing that requires the coordination of everybody feeling welcomed and able to contribute, and then a person can come into that particular place and bottleneck it or stop it, or, you know, John the 23rd can open all the big windows and then someone can come and close them again. So it's a big thing we're talking about here, and that's the prayer. Is it a prayer or almost despair? When the foundations are destroyed, well, what can the just do? And he's seeing the foundations of Yahwism, God, the lover of the poor, the justice systems crumbling under the greed of the military and political leaders of his time. Israel, just a comment now, is founded upon faith in Yahweh, who cares for the poor and needy. Well, when this foundation is destroyed by the ruthless, where can those who are faithful to the covenant go to find redress? Where do the poor go? And as I'm praying it now as a Christian, we're reminded of Paul's remark in the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 3, verse 11, where he prays, the foundation is Jesus Christ. Hence, the beautiful thing we're able to do, keep looking at Jesus and checking everything by him. So if someone in the name of Christianity, for example, believes in preemptive strikes or ruthless military thing, or economic as well, we just put Jesus' words up, love your enemy. And then ask, is this Christian? How you love your enemy, of course, is not an easy thing, but I'll know if you love your enemy. You might still have to defend yourself and all that, but you won't treat them badly or demonize them, will you? So Jesus is not unclear on many issues. Christians can be narrow, bigoted, moralistic, judgmental, and all the rest of the blooming stuff. So if the foundations are destroyed, well, there's the question of this psalm, and it's a prayer I'm sure we could all pray. Verse 4, Yahweh, this is the answer to verse 3. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the just do? And here's your reply. Yahweh dwells in the holy temple. Yahweh, whose throne is in heaven, whose eyes look down on the world, whose gaze examines the peoples of the earth. You might be coming to my church and you might hate the homilies, but Jesus is there in the tabernacle. Jesus is truly present here. You might go to Mass and you're not too sure about the community, but heavens, you're receiving communion. You're on Calvary. And on Calvary there were butchers murdering Jesus. There was also the mother and the beloved disciple, weren't they? So do you stay away from Calvary because there are people up there who are interested in crucifixions? Or do you come because the mother is there and the disciple is there and you're welcome there and Mary of Magdala is there and you're welcome to come? I think you come for that. And people who stay away because of the other, you might as well stop being a human being. Stay away from the world because there's crooks in the world. So leave the priesthood because there's priests who don't behave properly. And you know what I mean? It just becomes bizarre. No, why are you here? So God is here and that's their faith. And as disciples of Jesus, our lives will be judged by how we respond to him and to his revelation concerning God. Here's Acts chapter 10. Jesus of Nazareth, says Peter to the Sanhedrin, commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one ordained by God as judge of the living and the dead. Ultimately, the world is in beautiful hands, because God is love. And if the love isn't getting through, don't blame God, and you do your best to bring it through. And if you've got one Francis of Assisi in the 13th century Italy, or you've got one saint, you know, one cardinal in the Vatican, John the 23rd, Roncalli, well, one's enough. If you've got one Mandela in South Africa, it's all right. If you've got one saint in your parish, it's a very blessed parish, because that saint is drawing in all the grace of God into the whole community. So instead of, to quote Confucius, I don't think Jesus would mind, it's better to light a candle than to curse the dark. So if you're worried about the dark, light half a dozen candles and it's not dark anymore. I'm preaching to myself when I say that. Verse 5. Yahweh tests the faithful and Rasha, again, the irreligious, those who are not faithful to the covenant, those who ignore God, those who, the sacred means nothing to them. They're just using things for their own present gain. Yahweh tests both. With all that he is, he hates the lover of violence. He will cause coals of fire and sulfur to rain down on the wicked. A scorching wind shall be their lot. And you can see where all that imagery comes from, can't you? The stories of Sodom and Gomorrah. And they're just stories that perhaps you might have used yourself as a catechist in earlier times, I don't know. And all they saw was, all they had from the memory was that the Dead Sea. Now that used to be, cities used to be there. But that's the deepest fissure in the earth's crust. It must have been enormous seismic activity to create that rift that goes all the way from Lebanon, just under Lebanon, all the way down to Lake Victoria in Africa. A real cut in the... And it's the deepest in the... So that, just imagine what went on to cause that. And cities were destroyed and all that. Well, that was all prehistory, of course. Centuries later, people said, look at what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. And they had to work out why, so they made up their stories. You couldn't give any reason at all. And so they had their stories. Sodom, was a lack of hospitality, really, plus a lot of other ugly things, but and so on. So that's the image of... Now, we know that God doesn't cause earthquakes. Well, I know that. I hope you do. God doesn't cause lightning or anything like that. But Zeus did, you know, and they thought God did. Lightning was God going... Whoosh. But God only does that in certain conditions of the weather. So what are you talking about? And earthquakes only happen in certain parts of the earth. So you can't tell me all the baddies are where the earthquake happens and all the goodies are having a wacko time somewhere else where the earth's plates aren't bumping into each other and so on. This is all part of the evolving world we're in. God loves all this. But he doesn't press buttons and organise all this. But they didn't think like that. Here's some images from the book of Revelation using the same stage language. They will drink the wine of God's wrath, poured unmixed into the cup of his anger. They will be tormented with fire and sulphur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. These are the beasts of the sea. This is the Roman Empire. This is language against the big dominant Roman power that's crushing Asia for its own benefit and economic and military power. So that's what they're talking about. So the key point here that's being made, the key point, is that evil has evil effects. It matters what we do, and we can't pretend that we can do evil and not suffer the consequences. And on the first day, we did quite a bit on the anger of God, which I won't repeat again for you, because it's a theme that needs a lot of understanding. Verse 7, for Yahweh is just, and he loves justice. The upright shall behold his face. We can look at that at a whole lot of levels, eh? Seeing the face of God is still a beautiful image, isn't it, for heaven. And here we've got, back in the book of Genesis, chapter 32, Jacob fighting his way to get into the Holy Land. He wrestles with the angel, which is God, really. He's wrestling with God. In fact, Israel may mean the one who wrestles with God. That's why he was given the name Israel on that occasion. So Jacob called this place where he wrestled with God Peniel. Peni face El God. I have seen God's face to face and my life is preserved. He encountered God. Numbers chapter 12 verse 8. A beautiful statement about Moses, one of the loveliest in the Bible. God says about all the other prophets, he says, oh no, but with Moses I speak face to face. In fact, the Hebrew is mouth to mouth. Very intimate. Clearly, not in riddles, he beholds the form of Yahweh. He doesn't dare say he sees the face of Yahweh, but he beholds God's form. He's in a very intimate relationship with God. Job, we sometimes read this on funeral services. In my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see on my side, and my eyes shall behold and not another. And Jesus, could give you much more, but I'll leave it with this. Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God. Just reflecting on that a bit further, St. Paul, 1 Corinthians 13, 12. Now we see in a mirror dimly, and do you remember their mirrors weren't like yours, you can see quite clearly in our mirrors. Theirs were bronze, you know, like beaten bronze, so it would be a bit vague. Now we see in a mirror dimly, then we shall see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I'll know fully, even as I have been fully known. And again, Romans 5, we boast in our hope of sharing in the glory of God. And 2 Corinthians 3:18, a most beautiful passage. All of us with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror, we're looking at Jesus, in other words, who's reflecting God's face. We are being transformed into the same image, into Jesus, from one degree of glory to another. And all this comes from the Lord, the Spirit. So the Lord, it's really Trinitarian, it's the Father, the Son and the Spirit all bound into that one lovely verse. Christ is in you, your hope of glory.